Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to HuffPost's brand new weekly podcast, Am I Making You Uncomfortable? Presented by me, Brogan Driscoll.
And me, Rachel Moss. This podcast is a frank, honest conversation about women's bodies, health and private lives. This week, we're discussing women and debt. 60% of the people who use the debt support charity Step Change are women. There are so many ways that debt can be gendered, from the fact that store cards are aimed at women, to the gender pay gap, to the fact that women are more likely to be single parents.
We'll be joined by Josie Warner, Senior Research and Insight Officer at debt charity Step Change, and financial wellness coach Bola Sol. And you can join the conversation by using the hashtag AIMYU. Okay, I'll go first because I was in debt for quite a long time, for the whole of my 20s, actually. I've only just paid off my debt. And for a long time, it was something that I felt ashamed about. I just hid away from it. Like I kind of had a credit card with a separate bank, so I didn't see the number. And it was kind of something I used my credit card kind of at the end of every month. I wasn't very good at managing my spending, in the fact that, I just used to go out all the time and go out for dinners, like honestly, like 3 or 4 times a week. And who did I think I was? on a journalist like entry level salary, I was like keeping up with my friends who are accountants and engineers and being an idiot. But anyway,
I feel like you're so harsh on yourself saying being an idiot, because I have plenty of friends who were in that same situation as you. I will admit that I wasn't, because I'm not going to pretend that I've ever been in bad debt when I haven't, because I am the stingiest person you'll ever meet on the other end of the scale. I like freak out if I've had 2 takeaways in a month. So I am the opposite of that. But I know plenty of people who will completely relate to what you were saying. And I don't think it's stupid at all, because it's so hard not to get swept up with your friendship group and their spending habits. I think for me, luckily in my friendship group, I've said this to you before, I'm naturally the organizer and I'm also stingy. So when I organize meals, it's to really cheap restaurants or like a picnic. So basically I'm responsible for helping everyone else stay out of debt.
So good. I wish I had a friend like you. But also you say that I'm being harsh on myself. You just said that you're stingy. Are we kind of like excusing our way, the way that we approach money in a way that's like not very fair?
That's so true.
To be sensible with money, even saying sensible makes it seem like you're boring, which you aren't at all. It's so interesting.
It definitely is. And I think it plays into the whole idea that we moralize the way we talk about money and particularly debt as well. So I've never been into big credit card debt or anything like that, but actually I do have massive debt in the form of a student loan and a mortgage, and those things are considered good debt, whereas credit cards are considered, and I say this air quotes, bad debt. And it's just so crazy how there are different judgments attached to different types of debt. I almost feel like if somebody says that they've got themselves into their overdraft because they've bought loads of clothes, you have to check yourself not to call that irresponsible. Whereas if somebody says they're a single mother and they're in debt because they're struggling with their rent, you go, oh my God, that's really sad. When actually both of those situations are going to impact that person's life. They're all related to their emotions and their well-being and their mental health. And I just think it serves that absolutely no one to get judgmental about debt. It's not helpful.
It's really interesting because I feel like for a really long time, I would joke about the fact that I had debt But I would never, ever have told anyone what their number was.
Yeah.
Because I feel like everyone kind of spoke about using credit cards, and lots of people spoke about not having any money and being broke. But there was so much shame around it. I saw this post actually on Instagram the other day from a woman who, she's just released a book actually. It's called My Frugal Year, her account. And she was in about £26,000 of debt. And she's documenting her journey of getting out of it. And something that she posted on her Instagram account a couple of weeks ago was, you're not in debt, you have debt. Which I thought was really interesting, because I never thought about that. Like, it's a difference between your debt being your identity and your debt being the situation that you're currently in.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
With help, obviously, depending on how serious your debt is, because my debt was not terrible. It was about £8,000, which is a lot of money, but not something that I couldn't get myself out of. You know, if I was in a sicky situation, I'm sure I would have been, like, I could have gone and lived with my parents. It's really interesting, that idea of having debt versus being in debt, I think.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Temporary, you know, the having it's something you can offload if you have help. And
yeah, it's a nice way of thinking about it. And also you touched on the idea that even though it wasn't comfortable for you having that debt, you knew you had a safety net. And I think just being upfront about those privileges, and also about like the big spectrum of debt as well, because it does go from the, oh shit, I've spent too much this month, to like really, really impacting people's lives and they're in it out of necessity. We're getting a little bit better, I think, as women talking about money. Like, I love Money Diaries on Refinery, which I know has got huge, on Refinery 29, that is, for anyone who hasn't seen it, which has got a huge following. And it is anonymized accounts of women sharing their spending habits, whether that's debt or not debt, all the ins and outs. And those kind of things are at least like bringing up the conversation a bit more, I think.
You mentioned that Money Diaries on Refinery 29 is an anonymous kind of column. And I think that's what makes it so brilliant, and also such a safe space for women to talk about their money. Their salary, their spending, their debt, their kind of living situation, in a way that allows them not to be judged. Because kind of when Money Diaries, it's from the US actually, it's a US import from Refinery 29. But when it kind of blew up in the UK, I remember lots and lots of publications, I don't know if you remember this, Rach, trying to copy the format.
Yes.
And the issue with all of the copycat approaches is that they featured the women, they either named them or they had their pictures in. And there are a couple of occasions where I remember one in particular where there was a woman who lived on her own, no, lived with her parents, had a decent salary, and but had no savings and used to spend quite a lot of her salary, I think, just kind of on clothes and going out. And she basically went viral with loads and loads of people dragging her for being irresponsible and being entitled. And it just struck me that the confessional nature of the Money Diaries format is like another way that society can judge women, you know, based on their money situation. And I think it's good that Refinery 29s is anonymous, because it protects the people who are coming forward about it. And it does open up really interesting conversation, because, like, I mean, I don't know any of my friends' salary.
Really? That's interesting. I think you find out salaries more if your mates are in public sector jobs. So I've got so many friends who are teachers. So the pay scales are very public. And like, as soon as they've got a head of department job, like, I know within a range what they're going to be paid. And I think because of that, they're quite open about it. But when you're in private sector jobs, yeah, it's a whole other matter. Even among other journalists, like, it takes a real long time to get to know someone, to have that honest conversation, to even figure out if you're on the right salary.
So obviously money is a really taboo subject, particularly in British culture. And I think that debt is even more taboo. So it's really great that we're going to be having this conversation, and we're going to hear from some listeners who have sent us in their own experiences of debt too.
My experience of debt is that you never get out of debt. You know, you need a dream come true or winning a lottery to actually balance yourself. And that's what my experience is. It's a more mental thing. You have to be strong and know how to balance and learn how to budget. But you never really be free from debt. I mean, who is? I mean, credit cards, mortgages, things like that. Everyone's got some debt to pay. But if you come from my background and many like me who have never had, you know, savings or having a job that can bring in $30,000 a year, you know, we've always been on the breadline. And so we've had to get into debt to be able to survive.
I got bankrupt about 15 years ago and I lost all the money I had. Then made me feel like a failure. I had to rely on parents and friends and I had to start from zero and build up. Psychologically, it was a very hard time. What it changed is it changed my attitude towards risk. I became quite afraid of taking risks. I thought it happened to me because I wanted more money, more recognition, more success. So it changed my perspective on how I looked at things. It made me concentrate on the job. From then on, I just wanted to do the best I can, and the success and the money, if they ever came after that. And I also, I think, started looking at things through the perspective of need. Do I really need to buy that thing? Do I really need it? So I think overall, it was a good experience.
Next up, we're joined by Bola Sol, financial wellness coach and the founder of Rich Girl Chronicles, a community for women to come together and talk money. Bola, thank you so much for joining us today. So you're a financial wellness coach, and I wondered whether you could explain what financial wellness means exactly for our listeners.
Yeah, so financial wellness is basically having less anxiety around your funds, regardless of how much you make. I understand everybody's circumstances are quite different, but it's really key that, you know, people inhale and exhale when it comes to their finances as well. And I say, okay, you know, how can I help others have a positive relationship with money so that they don't avoid it, but they're getting in front of it and they feel confident? Rich Girl Chronicles is about defining your story with money. So whether you want a one bedroom house for yourself or somebody wants a six bedroom house, you get to decide how you value your money. Because also, to be fair, it's a reflection of how you value yourself, how you value your time, and how you value your energy.
Love that. It's such a positive way of framing it. Where do we learn our money habits from, would you say? So some of those habits that are kind of getting in our own way.
It's parents, it's media, it's gentrification, it's colonization, it's patriarchy, it's, you know, it's history, right? It's about how we are taught from home, but also what our parents were taught, right? And who their parents were. And so a variety of sources.
We were talking about our own money experiences at the start. Brogan was really honest about her own experience of debt. And then I said, on the flip side, I'm the stingiest human being you've ever met. And I do think that comes from my upbringing and having a time when like things were really tight financially. So my mum was very open about budgeting and all of those things. So I guess you can either lean into what you learn or you can rebel against it, can't you? Is that something you see with the women you talk to a lot?
Absolutely. It's about learning and unlearning. And, you know, I'm very honest with my journey as well. And when I say, look, I'm not in the best place financially, or I am, I guess it starts with honest conversation, right?
Yeah, it's so true. And could you tell us a bit, I think this leads us really nicely into all of your work with Rich Girl Chronicles. Could you tell us kind of what it involves exactly and how it works?
Yeah, so it's currently an accountability group. And every month there is only one obligation. You send me your budget before the new month begins, or at the start of the new month. And I always tell them a budget is a forecast, but I need to see that you are committing to this. And then we have various discussions about everything. So recently we had a discussion that, you know, we have, some of them are like co-founders of amazing companies, right? And some are also coaches of different industries and things like that. So it's literally just a collective of women who come together and we just say, look, we are actually very powerful. Recently on Sunday, we shared multiple streams of income. I shared how I'm currently making 5 streams of income. Somebody shared how they're making 2. And, you know, sometimes some of those income streams aren't as powerful as the others in terms of the financial value, but it was about sharing and saying, okay, how do we get started here? How did you get started? So it's literally just a community of women who are empowering each other financially.
We were talking earlier about how there is quite a lot of secrecy around money. I'm really interested in kind of how you've like tipped that on its head and what is so powerful about that conversation and connecting with others and talking about money.
It is that you are not any form of slave to what society has told you you are, right? You're not a slave to money. You know, you have freedom. And this is what people don't understand. Even some of my clients, they sometimes get a bit nervous with me. And I'm like, because here's the thing, right? You have to give your budget at the beginning of the month. That is your end of the bargain. However, if you don't and you come to me and you say, look, this happened this month, I'm going through a tough time with my family, I am understanding. But the fact that even sometimes my clients don't feel they have the right to exercise that is a bit of a problem, because it means that we feel that we are prisoners of our own condition. And we don't have to be.
Yeah, yeah. Super, super powerful. I love that you're empowering so many women to talk about this. Why have you picked women, other than being a woman, as your target demographic? Why do you think women need more help with this stuff?
I mean, let's look at patriarchy. Let's look at gender pay gap. It is. Let's look at feminism. Let's look at intersectional feminism. It is just, there is a myriad of reasons I've chosen it. But studying mathematics and finance at university and, you know, gagging for internships at big corporations and then going there and seeing these big buildings, and then looking around and say, wow, there isn't one black woman here. Wow, there's two women in the room and there's 100 of us. I say, this is a problem. And then I'm like, I have to go back and tell my community, because I do not want to be the token anything. I do not want to be the token woman. I don't want to be the token black woman. I want to be the woman who had a rope that tied back, or had her arm tied back and said, right, let's bring another one. Let's bring another one. Let's bring another one. And that we bond together to make a positive difference. So we are not in the room enough. And I said, let's be in the room, and then let's build a table.
So store cards and buy now, pay later schemes are often marketed at women, I would say. What do you think about those kind of financial products?
I believe they prey on people's financial illiteracy. And I think for so long, people have been preying on people's ignorance, and it is wrong. And I speak very publicly about those companies on social media. They send me private emails saying, hey, we understand you're upset. Let's tell you about how it works. And I say, how dare you? I am an educated black woman. How absolutely dare you? I know what's happening, and it's not okay. You know, this is how elderly people are being tricked out of their pension, right? People are told, and you know, cryptocurrency isn't regulated. So, you know, someone can say, hey, look, I've just put $6,000 in Bitcoin, and they've told me it's going to be $60,000 and so-and-so years. And you just think, where was the knowledge? Who was the credible person? Where's the validity behind this? And I think now we are using what is about to be an old school form of corporate greed, and we're trying to take it into a new world order. But whatever the new world order is, I think it's basically saying everybody has to stop being greedy. Everybody has to stop being superior. It is time for equality.
You just spoke about how confusing money is, like deliberately so, for so many people, and how hard it is to understand, like, you know, interest rates on some of these pay later schemes and things. Do you have any advice or resources that you could recommend to people in terms of improving confidence or literacy around money? Are there any accounts that people should follow? Are there any like resources that people should read?
The Break platform by Patricia Bright. If you check out The E-Man Effect, he is a financial expert and qualified wealth manager. So he has a great platform. This is all via Instagram, by the way. And Stock Pickers Academy, they're FCA regulated though, which is fantastic.
In terms of emotional spending, I take your point. It's a really interesting point that there's lots of different influences and factors at work. We wanted to ask about overspending, because we're talking about debt. So we wanted to talk about the temptation to buy things and spend money, and why we do so, how it makes us feel.
Of course, yeah. So I find, from myself included and my clients, that emotional spending can come as a result of many things. You know, I have thought about doing a master's in financial psychology, psychology. One of them is PMS, right? If we're keeping it frank, when Mother Nature arrives, oh my gosh, I do not want to clean. I do not want to cook. I don't want to speak to anybody. Emotional spending is having a hard day at work and then walking past one of your favorite retailers and just saying, oh my gosh, thank God for, you know, contactless. There are levels to emotional spending and it's very dependent on as well your upbringing, also your current circumstance. If you are currently living in a home where you're not happy with, is it that you want to in some form or another escape and live somewhere else? There are so many levels to emotional spending and it's very dependent on your current circumstance and I guess your history and all your life lessons and what has made you who you are today.
You mentioned there having an emergency fund. It made me think about that whole idea of a fuck it fund, which I massively prescribe to. I don't know if you speak about that with the women you work with at all, but for anyone listening who doesn't know what the hell I'm on about, a fuck it fund is basically spare money that you have by your side if you're ever like, fuck, I need to get out of this situation. It could be a shitty house share, a shitty job, a horrible relationship, any of those things, you need a fuck it fund. But of course, if you're in debt, that is one of those things that is stopping you from getting that, right? So is that something you talk to women about and how can you get that blanket if you don't have it?
Yeah, so I would definitely say when somebody has an emergency fund, but they are or wants an emergency fund and they're also in debt, it's about creating ratios, creating percentages where you split it just like a pie chart. I'd like to keep things very simple. And I say even with debts, you have to look at urgent debts first, non-urgent debts, right? What comes first? And then maybe you can just build a small buffer of an emergency fund. So maybe you can put 5% of your income into an emergency fund, but make sure you're getting the best rate of interest. But then you look at your debt, for example, and then you just say, okay, well, let me put, I don't know, 15% into it. So that's 10% more, but that means I pay it off faster. So I make people create debt repayment plans. I'm somewhat of a financial artist. I'm like, you draw me the picture you want to envision and I will help you get started. And then, you know, you finish it off.
And do you have any tips for dealing with money and debt in a new relationship as well? From a wellness perspective, do you bring that up straight away? How do you bring that up? Is there anything like that you can help us with?
Well, it depends on the type of relationship you want with the person. Because if it's like, I don't see a long-term future with you and I'm just having fun during quarantine, as I call them quarantine bays. I'm literally just like, look, you have no business knowing my business. But if you see a long-term with them, it's important you start having these discussions and say, look, this is where I'm currently at. This is my situation. I think it's important to make it clear that when you are making a statement, ask yourself if there's anything you need from that statement from the other person. So you say, you know, do you let them know? I would really appreciate your assistance on this. And assistance doesn't have to be financial assistance. It could be professional assistance. Maybe they're fantastic with graphs or they're fantastic with Excel. But in order to include someone in your personal finances, it means that you include them in your personal life. To which extent is completely up to you. So if I'm dating someone and it's 3 months and I have a bit of debt left, I might tell you, I might not. But if I want to share my life with you, then I would like to let you know.
It's such a good point. It's such a relief, I think, when people... So I was saying earlier that I've just kind of got out of credit card debt. Just.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
I'm proud. Thanks. I feel like I've gone red.
It's a good thing it's a podcast.
My finance fairy godmother just praised me. Yeah, so I was in debt for ages and I was really embarrassed to talk about it. And even I've been with my boyfriend for a couple of years and it was a while until we both spoke about money and realised we were in the same position and neither of us were telling each other that really, we probably shouldn't have spent the money that we had. And once we opened up about it, it did take us a while, but once we opened up about it, we were kind of able to check out each other, not each other's spending, but maybe sometimes actually, we check each other's spending, check our spending as a couple, encourage each other to pay things back. And it was just I felt so much lighter once we'd spoken about it, to be honest, because it was something that I was like hiding, I think. It was very freeing. I just wanted to share that.
Well, no, it's because you say you're hiding it, but there's a lot of shame around it, right? Like we joke about it, but there's so much shame. Why do you think we have so much shame about it?
it's ingrained in the culture that we've been told is a culture we should accept, and that culture is now shifting and changing. We shouldn't feel ashamed about anything. We talk about sex more than we talk about money. You have to question these things. I don't get it. And I think for so long, my quest to understand personal finances has come from a place of scarcity. You know, why did I not have money to an extent growing up? We never went without food, praise my mum. But I think right now everybody is having a truth moment, whether or not they want to announce it themselves. So I think it's a cultural thing. It's such a shame, but this is why we're here, to break the stigma, women.
Bola, so we ask all of our podcast guests the same question. What makes you uncomfortable?
Racism. Since the dawn of time, I have felt discriminated against who I am. Born and bred in Brixton, South London, and I say that very proudly. I've always called myself Bola. It is an abbreviation for my full name, Obolaji. And sometimes I felt the need to use my English name, which is Anita. There's been microaggressions all my life. There's been macroaggressions. And I think we've been quiet for so long, or we've just somewhat, some of us have accepted it in one form or another. And with the very public killing of George Floyd, and I have to shout out to someone who could have been my auntie, someone could have been my mother. Belly Majinga is a woman who a member of the public spat in her face. And I believe she was a train driver, and she passed off. She passed away from COVID-19 as a black woman. I'm tired of racism. I'm tired of any ism.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a really powerful thing for us to include. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brilliant. Bola.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Much. I hope you get some chill time this afternoon.
Thank you. Soon. Yeah, definitely. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Being really poor growing up meant that when I finally started to earn my own money, I was really frugal. But then I realised that spending money on myself was like self-soothing. So I went so crazily into debt and had no idea how much debt I was in until I decided that the agony of the sleepless nights wasn't worth it anymore. So I went on a course, came back home, finally opened all the envelopes, then opted into being poor for as long as it took to pay it all off. I've not been in debt since, unless you count mortgages, and I won't be getting into debt again.
When I was on maternity leave and when it was time to go back to work, I realised that I couldn't afford it. Between exorbitant nursery fees and overpriced train fares, I would have taken home just over £100 a month and spent less than an hour a day with my baby. So I took £10,000 out of our savings account, took out a £20,000 loan and bought a franchise. It didn't start well and it only got worse. Not only was I not making any money, but soon after starting the business, I had to find £1,500 a month to cover my overheads. Then COVID-19 happened. I couldn't trade, I wasn't eligible for a loan, I couldn't sell it, I couldn't afford to keep it going, and I certainly couldn't afford financially or emotionally to start from scratch when it would be possible again. So I terminated the franchise agreement and closed the company. Today I find myself having lost over £40,000, 20 of which I still need to pay back over the next 4 years.
Now we're joined by Josie Warner, Senior Research and Insight Officer at debt charity Step Change, which is the UK's largest provider of free debt advice.
So, Josie, could you explain for those listeners who haven't heard of Step Change before what the charity does and who it's aimed at?
So, we work with people across the UK who are experiencing problem debt. So, we provide free tailored debt advice to those people, so either over the telephone or online. And we also help people kind of find recommendations for their debt problems. So there's a range of different solutions that people can take. So yeah, we have a team of close to 1,000 advisors who provide tailored advice to people struggling with financial difficulty.
The statistics around women in debt are pretty sobering. We know that it's a really prevalent problem. Over 60% of Step Change's clients are women. Why are women so disproportionately affected by debt? What are some of the key reasons why women end up in these situations?
I think there are two different elements to this. So I think there are kind of environmental and economically environmental reasons. So this is things like the gender pay gap. Women are more likely to be to have caring responsibilities for family members or children. Women are more likely to be in insecure work. So that includes kind of 0 hours contracts and things like that. And that just makes the wider environment for women economically really tricky to navigate through. And then often women kind of in financial difficulty or even before financial difficulty are impacted by what we call life events. So this is things like relationship breakdown, experiencing unemployment or redundancy, or experiencing kind of a new illness or injury. If you kind of couple those two things together, it makes it really difficult for women to, yeah, just work through their financial situations, and it can make financial situations really tricky.
In terms of spending, are women more susceptible to spending more? Or because it feels like there are kind of these buy now, pay later schemes that are marketed at women, and, you know, a lot of like a lot of kind of like various shopping things that are marketed at women.
I don't think necessarily women have are more likely to overspend. I actually think it's a bit of a myth that goes on there. I think with buy now, pay later, it's interesting. I've seen kind of over the last year, you see a lot of advertising for that on things like Instagram, for example. And I think it's just about making women aware of the risks that are associated with using those kinds of credit payment. But in our stats, so this is for people kind of in problem debt, we find with women, they're less likely to have higher credit debt. So men are more likely to have higher debts on credit cards and other credit products. But women are more likely to be behind on household bills, so more likely to build up arrears on things like their heating, electricity, council tax, things like that. So it's an interesting point, and we speak about it quite a lot. And I think it's important for us as women and women to talk about budgeting and spending. But I think it is a bit of a myth that goes on that women kind of fall into financial difficulty because of problems with spending. I think there's, as we were kind of talking about before, I think there's a lot of other factors that come into play with women and their finances.
So Step Change obviously focus on people in problem debt. That is a lot of your clients. What kind of impact does that kind of debt have on the people that you work with, particularly women?
Debt has a huge effect. And I think the thing is, it extends way beyond someone's financial situation. There's a lot of research out there about the experience of debt on women, that it can really really impact their mental health, for example, and really feed into many other areas of their lives. So it can cause an awful lot of stress. We have a lot of cases of women telling us about how debt just keeps them up at night because they worry so much. So debt can be a really harmful situation and an experience for someone to go through.
Could you, for our listeners, kind of define what you mean by problem debt and what maybe perhaps some of the different types of debt?
Problem debt is where debt starts to feel like it's a really heavy burden. And as I was saying before, starts to really impact on other areas of your life. So if you're finding that kind of keeping up with commitments, like credit commitments, are a real struggle, you're just not able to keep up with the repayments on a regular basis. If you find that you're falling behind on different bill types, or it's just kind of generally you feel like your financial situation is just really impacting on you, that is what we would classify as problem debt.
So you're a policy advisor. Right now, what are the most pressing issues that you're dealing with, and how are you trying to advise your clients?
So I work in the research, policy and public affairs team. So as you can imagine, coronavirus has kind of shifted everything. Just trying to make sure that people who are at real risk of financial difficulty and people who may have already fallen into financial difficulty are getting the support that they need, and then further down the line that support really continues.
What would you like to see the government doing to help people who've been really hit financially by lockdown and by the pandemic in general?
I think firstly, kind of preventing people or protecting people from unaffordable repayments, for example, evictions. A lot of our clients in problem debt rent in the private rented sector, and evictions are a real worry for us further down the line. So there's an evictions ban at the moment, but we're just worried about what's going to happen after that. We're also looking to make sure that people are provided with grants and things for when they most need it. So there are people, and there's people coming through to debt advice, for example. Other stats are showing really alarming rates of food bank use and other things. So we just want to make sure that people have the grants and the income support that they need in order to cope financially. And then also we're looking at universal credit. That seems like the most kind of form of support that's the most forefront for politicians. There's steps that can be taken to improve universal credit. So, for example, once someone starts getting paid universal credit, money is deducted for certain things. So, for example, advance payments that happen when there's a 5-week wait between applying and then receiving payments. So we want deductions to be overhauled and to be suspended and looked at.
Do you have advice for listeners? What's the kind of first steps with reaching out for advice with your charity?
So if people do need support, they can contact us online. So we have an online debt advice tool. So if you don't want to talk to anyone, then you can go through that anonymously. And we also have telephone advice, which also is anonymous, but the advisor will take you through kind of the advice, and they'll go through all of your income and monthly expenditure and your debts and your arrears, and look at what solution may be best for you. So you can either contact us online or over the telephone, and we're open 6 days a week.
So you mentioned that a lot of your services are anonymised, so people can get in touch digitally or over the phone, and they don't have to give their name or lots of personal details and things like that. Why have you, as a charity, decided to do that? So we were talking earlier about the shame that comes around debt and embarrassment and things like that. Is that something you encounter?
So for a lot of people, it's quite difficult to talk about financial problems. So for those people, I think online debt advice is a really good option. But our advisors over the telephone, they're really supportive, non-judgmental, and will give kind of the best advice that's tailored to you.
So Josie, we have a question that we ask every guest who comes onto our podcast, and that is, what makes you uncomfortable?
Can I give two answers? So one, I'd say kind of on the debt stuff, we touched on it a little bit already, but the taboo around debt makes me really uncomfortable. I mean, I'm someone who works for a debt advice charity, so I'm more comfortable than most talking about debt, but I try and bring it up with some of my friends sometimes, and it's really awkward. And I guess that's why we're talking about it today. I think the more we can do to get rid of the stigma and shame and embarrassment around debt, which it doesn't need to be, it affects so many people, as we've already discussed. The taboo around it makes me quite uncomfortable. Outside of that, I was thinking about this. What's made me really uncomfortable, I'm downstairs at the moment, but because I'm trying to be closer to the router so I don't lose you. But I've been working up out of my bedroom mostly, and I'm just quite aware that kind of all of my colleagues and external people that I speak to on a regular basis have just kind of seen my bedroom. It's really bizarre.
So it's strange.
Just not something you would ever kind of imagine, but it's like there, and it's like, this is my bedroom. So that's
so intrusive, isn't it?
It is really intrusive, but there's no way around it. So I'd say that's something that's been making me feel quite uncomfortable the last couple of months.
It is a very surreal part of working from home life.
Definitely.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us. That was so interesting and informative. Lots to think about. And I think it'll be really helpful for listeners as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me and inviting me on. It was great to talk to you guys.
listened to this episode and you're worried about debt and you need some advice or some help, there are organisations out there who will listen and will support you. You can find Step Change at stepchange.org and their advice line is 0800 138 1111. And if you'd like some mental health support to do with money, Mind is just one of the really great charities out there that you can contact. You'll find them online at mind.org.uk or you can ring the Mind Support Helpline on 0300 123 3393. That's it this week from Am I Making You Uncomfortable? Please subscribe to our podcast and review it. I'm Rachel Moss and you can find me on Twitter at @RachelMoss_.
And I'm Brogan Driscoll, and you can find me at @Brogan_Driscoll. Thank you to our producer, Crystal Genesis, our assistant producer, Rachel Porter, and our sound engineer, Nag Karindo.
You've just been listening to Am I Making You Uncomfortable? Hashtag AIMYU.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.